Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about the Kingdom of God, and we're talking about socialism and democracy and being in bondage and being set free and being a human resource and being nothing more than merchandise. If you belong to God, you belong to God. You are not merchandise, but you are His loving children and are loved by Him. But if you are a worker of iniquity, then you will be cast out. If you are a foolish virgin who has remained separate and a virgin, but have not trimmed your wick, have not prepared for the wedding feast, the door will be slammed in your face. That sounds pretty mean, but there's messages in there. And everyone who goes to church should learn those messages. And you should have preachers that are pointing out what the early church was doing, which is not being done today. The church is one form of government. What kind of form of government is it? It's not a government like the governments of the world, because it doesn't have men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. It has men who call themselves benefactors, but they don't exercise authority over the people. They depend upon free will offerings. You're going to get a different kind of society. It's going to change you if you live in a society that is dependent upon free will offerings of every individual and not some central authority that is exercising authority to provide for the needs of your society. Those are going to be two different kinds of society. They're going to bear different kind of fruit in that society. And where is the fruit of society? It's the children of society who grow up and become society. Because families produce family. And broken families produce broken families. And selfish families produce selfish families. And selfish people produce selfish people. And unselfish people produce unselfish people. But each generation must be given a choice. But in Egypt, they were not given a choice. They were in bondage because their parents had brought them into bondage, because they sold themselves into bondage, because they were not prepared for hard times. We talked in the last show about South Africa, how there are a great many poor in South Africa. A great many poor in South Africa. A great many who do not come together and realize that they have the power. The only time they come together is to strike or to force. Why are not they coming together, and those part-time servants who can't afford a house work full-time? Someone be an entrepreneur. Don't just give them a house in their backyard so they can get away with working part-time. But create an entrepreneurial situation where they are providing a service to society, so that their part-time job as a servant will suddenly become overwhelmed with their full-time job of providing a service to the community. Industry, righteousness, serving one another will make you wealthy as a society. Maybe not as an individual always, but it will make you self-sustaining. They talk about democracy. I said somewhere along the way, in the book, The Higher Liberty, I say somewhere along the way, some people began to believe that we collectively had the right to decide what was good and what was evil. Not only for ourselves, but for our neighbor as well. And we called that right to decide democracy. When people say, you know, this is a democratic form of government, they have a tendency to think this means that you have a right to decide. But if that decision is collectively, you don't really decide. The mob decides. The majority decide. You get to cast your bid into the decision. You get to ante up. You get to lay your bet down. But no matter how you look at it, 51% are the ones who are actually deciding, not you. You try to gather together and all have one purse and decide what's best for everybody. But somebody's given power over somebody else, and power corrupts. 51% of the people can be corrupted. If we were all angels, as Madison refers to, then democracies would work. And someone said, and I probably got it written down somewhere, but, democracy only works in heaven where they don't need it. In hell where they don't want it. But anyway, the reality is democracy was looked down upon by most Americans. In early America, the success and prosperity of the people was no doubt in part due to the fact that the church, and I'm quoting here, the church in New England were so many nurseries of freemen, training them in the principles of self-government and accustoming them to the feeling of independence. In these petty organizations were developed in practice the principles of individual and national freedom. Individual and national freedom. Each church was a republic in embryo. The fiction became a fact, the abstraction a reality. Now, I said I was quoting there, and that you can find that quote in the book The Higher Liberty, but it originally came from the lives of Isaac Heath and John Bowles, who were elders of the church, and of John Eliot Jr., preacher in the mid-1600s. And the book was actually written in the 1850s, but they were quoting these preachers of the 1600s. Way back in the 1600s, men were realizing that the church was an embryo republic. And a republic is very much different than a democracy. In a democracy, it's mob rule. In an indirect democracy, you elect some sort of electoral college, and they decide. They become lawmakers, and the majority of them decide what is good and what is evil. But in a republic, the leaders are titular. They have no authority to make law. So where's law made? They might have some authority to make law to deal with borders or something. But they don't really make law. In a republic, your leaders aren't lawmakers. They're representatives. So where is the law made? It's made down in the courts. 12-man jury from the bottom up. This jury decides that this is against the law, and that jury decides that this is against the law. And then you quote that jury in the next jury, and in the next jury, in the next jury, and they decide what is fact and law. Can injustice occur there? Yes, but it will be immediate, and it will be localized. And in the system of Israel, they actually had a system of appeals courts that went up through the best of society. The men who were the men of charity, the Levite, the men who were health, education, and welfare for society, supported by free will offerings alone. This was a true republic. You can see in many encyclopedias and in history books where they refer to that early Israel model as the earliest form of a republic, long before the Greeks, where the entire government was funded by free will offerings that were given to the ministers of your choice. And there was no democracy that could vote and say suddenly that everybody had to bow down to this man's will, at least not until Saul. Saul was elected and appointed by, elected really by the people, but appointed by the high priest or by Samuel. And some followed him and some did not. And then after a while, when they got down to Rehoboam, many did not. But the die had already been cast. That election of Saul was called a rejection of God. The Americans have moved from that virtuous, self-reliant republic to a covetous democracy in a republic. Now, a lot of people say that the United States is a republic, and they're actually would be incorrect. According to the American Creed, published and read in Congress, I believe in the United States of America as a government whose just powers are derived from the consent of the governed, a democracy in a republic. So the United States is a democracy in a republic. And the relationships of the people of that democracy have changed over the years, and therefore the power of the democracy has changed and become more and more powerful and less republic. These two governments of a democracy and a republic are really at odds with each other. Today, most people, if you mention republic, they think that you're talking about an indirect democracy. No, a republic is a much different animal. This democracy and a republic, this process of becoming that, is done more by contract, social compact, application and participation, than by vote itself. But the right to vote in that democracy makes you a party to it. And so, you know, a lot of people say if you don't vote, you don't have a right to complain. But the reality is if you do vote, you don't have a right to complain because you've anteed out. You've laid your whatever it is required upon the table. You know, I spoke with an attorney the other day in Washington, D.C., and I need to put it together and share with him the oath required for any new citizen of the United States. Most people are completely unaware of that oath and what it states in that oath. And I think that if many Americans, if they understood it, they wouldn't take it today. But you can't even get a passport unless you have theoretically agreed. It is assumed by statute that if you apply for a passport, you've agreed to that oath. And we'll talk about that later on in this series. But right now we're going to the people have become a nation of consumers who willingly bite their neighbor for their own personal security. In other words, your security is paid for the education of your children. You know, the education of your children, what does that cost? I mean, it used to be about $6,000 per student. I know in some districts it goes up to about $20,000 to $22,000 per student. So if you had three kids in school, then theoretically you would owe some $60,000 with those figures. Maybe you would only owe $18,000. I know some schools nearby that it used to be six, but now it's like $10,000 per student it costs. So that would mean that, you know, I had six children, I'd be $60,000 a year. Somebody's going to have to pay. Well, I wasn't paying that much in taxes, $60,000 a year. I wasn't even making $60,000 a year during that period. And so who's paying for that? I would have to take a bite out of my neighbor in order to finance that education. Somebody who had no children whatsoever would have to pay in order to provide that education. And that's legal. But it isn't the way of the church. It isn't the way of Christ. We should be homeschooling our children. If you're a Christian, you should be homeschooling your children and then gathering together in your congregations to provide the best education you could. And you'll have some parents who can help you with math and some parents who could help you with history and some parents that could help you with, you know, physics or algebra or chemistry. And you pool your efforts and everybody gets a really, 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 really good education. Homeschoolers score 30% higher than public school education. And that includes homeschoolers that are being taught by blue-collar workers. People have a tendency to think that homeschoolers are always taught by college graduates. But that's not the case. Many, many homeschoolers are being taught by parents who have not gone to college. And those children are still scoring way higher than public school education children. And some of those children, there have been special needs children and children with learning disabilities and dyslexia, etc., who would go to school and were flunking out and went home and got A's. When they were taught at home, they got A's. But when they were taught in the school, they were failing. Why is that? Why were they learning so much more at home using the same curriculum as they were learning when they were in school? Lots of reasons. And the pace at which they learned was way faster at home. So what's happening? See, the school is an unnatural environment. And at home, there's generally more love than there is at school. No, that's not always the case, and maybe there always will be a need for public schools. But the reality is, the more you move in the other direction, the wiser and more intelligent and the more learned your children will become. But you have to, it requires sacrifice to do that. So the people have become a nation of consumers who willingly bite their neighbor for their own personal security. People have fallen in love with the benefits offered by democracy. But at what price? What price to society do we pay? James Madison, back in 1787, stated that the Federalist Papers, I think it was number 10, democracy is the most vile form of government. That's James Madison. Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the right of property. Incompatible with the rights of property. And have, in general, been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Yet today, in America, people want you to fight for democracy. Fisher Ames, who is the author of the First Amendment, said, a democracy is a volcano which conceals the fiery materials of its own destruction. These will produce an eruption and carry desolation in their way. Now, is this move in modern society for democracy a good thing? Is somebody orchestrating our move towards democracy and dependence upon democracy in order to bring about the destruction of the nation? You know, evil is very smart. They are very clever. And many people today lack knowledge. And yea, because they lack knowledge, they are doomed to destruction. But they have to love the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth in order to move in the right directions. In 1815, John Adams said, democracy, while it lasts, is more bloody than either aristocracy or monarchy. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There is never a democracy that did not commit suicide. That's John Adams, 1815. So did he know that about the United States? He knew that the United States itself, by the construction of the United States, was a democracy in the Republic. He knew that. But the Republic was where most government took place, and most of that was in the hands of the individual. Social welfare, education, fire departments, everything was run by the people, directly by the people, not by some corporate municipality or corporate government. It was run by the people. Even your local militias were run by the people. Well regulated in the sense that they regulated themselves. John Marshall, who was the longest serving Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, said, between a balanced republic and a democracy, the difference is like that between order and chaos. A republic is order, he said, he thought, but a democracy was chaos. Even Alexander Hamilton, who was not my favorite politician of that day, had a lot of goofy ideas, I think, and was quite the antagonist with many of the early American forefathers, said, real liberty is never found in despotism or in the extremes of democracy. Benjamin Franklin warned emphatically that when the people find they can vote themselves money, that will herald the end of the republic. And of course, that's what they've done. They voted themselves money. And more than that, they have shirked their responsibility of independence. Their societies, their local societies, are not independent. One of the things that Catherine Austin Fitz was talking about is, if you want to invest in stock, buy a local ranch. Get together in a group and buy a local ranch, and so that you own that local ranch. That's the stock. Cattle and sheep, not stock way off. Or buy a butcher shop. If you can't afford to buy a butcher shop, get together with 9 other people and buy that butcher shop. And work together like those families in Big Fat Greek Wedding to make sure that it's successful. Take the best of your congregation in business and the best in your congregation in meat cutting and the best in your congregation in customer service and work together and create a business on the side and build that business up, and whoever wants to run that business the best, let him buy you out and you start another business with him buying you out. You know, go in to get, I know a bunch of guys who got together. One was a property manager, owned apartments. And another was a carpenter. Another one was a construction worker, actually a contractor. Another one was a plumber. Another one was an electrician. Another one was a cabinet builder. And they all got together and they either bought old apartment complexes and fixed them up, or they built new complexes. Until they had like 30, 40 complexes, and they were, you know, multi-million dollar business. And then they knew the business. Every one of them knew the business, and they were getting older, and they started dividing it up. And one took 5 buildings, and one took 3 buildings, and one took 2 buildings. They just worked it out, and they divided up the assets, and they were all wealthy men by now. And they would still help each other out, but they became independent. And this is what you should do in your congregations. Come together and start doing this. And make each of you independent. That's Ubuntu. But not lose sight of congregations of congregations. And you make that choice, and you have ministers who know how to bring that together and bring that about. And the ministers need to learn how to bring that about. In a true spirit of the republic. You know, that Benjamin Franklin understood that a democracy is 2 wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. And, you know, that was Benjamin Franklin's idea. And to some degree, that's true. But well-armed in what? Well armed in righteousness. Just having a gun, that's not well armed. Well armed is having a righteous heart, a righteous mind, and a righteous approach to loving your neighbor as yourself. Wanting to see your neighbor a success, and your neighbor's neighbor, and your neighbor's neighbor's neighbor. Your loyalty is to righteousness, to law, judgment, mercy, and faith. That is where your loyalty is, not to some symbol of law, judgment, mercy, and faith, but to actual righteousness. This is why we are to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness, not our righteousness, not our self-righteousness, not our country right or wrong, but righteousness, right and right only. Long before these men voiced their objection to democracy, Plato postulated. This is Plato. This is thousands of years ago. Dictatorships naturally arise out of democracy. He said that. This is not news. It's news to a lot of people in America who think that democracy is the greatest. Blah, 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 blah. And long after people like Adams, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, democracy is morose and runs to anarchy. Now, when he used the word anarchy, he meant chaos, in part. But also, if democracy is king, or the mob rules, then soon there is no rule but self, because most people are selfish. And we are breeding a vast population of selfish people, because that's what social welfare, social justice, socialism produces. Winston Churchill wrote that socialism is a philosophy of failure, the creed of ignorance, the gospel of envy. Its inherent virtue is equal sharing of misery. He went on to say that the best argument against democracy is a 5-minute conversation with the average voter. If you listen to some of the other people of those times, such as The Spirit of American Government, written by a professor, J. Allen Smith, you'll see that it is difficult to understand how anyone who has read the proceedings of the Federal Convention can believe that it was the intention of that body to establish a democratic government. They were creating an institution separate from the republics, outside of the individual states. After the Constitution was put in place and the power was being exercised by that government, the states were as foreign to each other as Mexico is to Canada, or was. Actually, Mexico and Canada are now getting less and less foreign because of treaties. But they were actual separate governments. This was something else. Now, that's changed and that's morphed, and we'll talk more about that. But we need to understand the principles of righteousness if we are to seek the kingdom of God. We'll be right back to Keys of the Kingdom.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hishollychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hishollychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hishollychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, "God bless America," and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. We're talking about this idea of democracy, republics, government, because the church is one form of government. Now, we don't overthrow other governments. We can save those other governments from their own destruction. If everybody who claimed to be a Christian was actually doing what the early church was doing, which was providing the social welfare for their people, through faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of liberty, while still, like the early Israelites who were still in bondage in Egypt, paying their tally of bricks, then it would take a tremendous burden off of modern government that is already bankrupt. We have a great deal of complaints that we see in the media about government not being fiscally responsible, spending more money than it has coming in. What the church should be doing is alleviating that burden with its own personal self-sacrifice. The people of the church should be doing that. And why? Because it is a demonstration of fiscal responsibility. We know that the governments of the world, in New Zealand and Australia and the United States and Canada and all these nations, even where they have nationalized their oil fields or what have you, are bankrupt. And they are in debt. You know, there was somebody talking in the media the other day about how, referring to all the places that have socialist medicine, that, oh, they had this problem, that problem, and it only cost them a few bucks, and it only cost them this much, and it only cost them that much. And a lot of that is delusional. But the reality is it costs them just as much as anybody else, but they don't feel the bite of that cost. But their children are born in debt. It was some $45,000, $54,000 in debt if you're born in New Zealand. Every child born in debt. And that debt is growing exponentially. So every child is a burden. And you're going to see what happened in Egypt. Every child was a burden. There was a debt involved so that if you had children, your tax burden actually increased. It's like the one-child contract in China. That if you have a child and you sign the one-child contract, you get all these benefits, free shoes, free education, free healthcare, free this, free that, free this, and all this is free, 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 but none of it's free. Because if your wife becomes pregnant again, she must abort. Yeah, she must abort. Or, she has an option, pay back all those benefits that she has taken for free, which of course, usually she can't. But if she wanted to remain free from the beginning, simply don't sign the one-child contract. There are people in China who have numerous children. They just never signed the one-child contract. They're also very successful businessmen. Now, if you want to be a successful businessman in China, you want to be a successful businessman in South Africa, you want to be a successful businessman in the United States, you want to be a successful businessman in New Zealand, you need to go to a church established by Christ. You need to gather together with other people who care as much about your success, your rights, your God-given rights, your children, everything about you, as much about you as they do themselves, because those people will help you be successful in the business of life, in the business of supporting your children and your family, and in educating your children. They're going to care about that. They're not going to care about the fact they want the school to remain open because they want some place to send their kids so that they're not around the house all day. I can't wait till school starts, I hear people say. Get these kids out of the house. I mean, it's just such a burden to be a parent. Well, you know what? When you're old and feeble, your kids are going to say, oh, it's my parents are such a burden. We're going to get rid of them. They're going to get rid of you as fast as you wanted to get rid of them. What goes around comes around. Get used to that. You know, go around and shop at those convalescent homes because that's where they're going to stick you. My wife and I met in a convalescent home. You do not want to get stuck there. There's some that aren't too bad, but none of them are as good as... There's no place like home, as Dorothy says. So anyway, let's back up. What did Abraham Lincoln say about this? Accustomed to trampling on the rights of others, you have lost the genius of your own independence and become the fit subjects of the first cunning tyrant who rises amongst you. Trampling on the rights of others. You're not doing that in your democracy, because this is what all these other guys were talking about in democracies. They trample on the rights of others. You want to be free? Start caring about the rights of others. Stop trampling on. Gather together in your congregations and promote the right of choice amongst yourselves. Give back the power of choice amongst yourselves. On little baby steps to start with, but as it grows, it will grow exponentially. And we will strengthen those who are poor in spirit. And we will become ready for Pentecost. Under a democratic government, the citizens exercise the power of sovereignty, and those powers will be first abused and afterwards lost if they are committed to an unwieldy multitude. But of course, you know, that's Edward Gibbon's, the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. But if we read in Exodus 23:2, it says, "Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil, neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment." That's a statement against democracies. That's an opposition to democracy. A simple democracy is the devil's own government. You know, that's Benjamin Rush who said that. Let me read to you out of Proverbs. If you go to Proverbs 1, verse 10. "My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not." Sinners. Aren't we all sinners? So if anybody entices thee, consent thou not. Don't consent. Don't make a covenant with them. Don't make an agreement with them. Now, what entice you to do what? It goes on to say, if they say, "Come with us, let us lay wait for blood." Blood, you mean like the sweat and blood of others? You know, the flesh of others, that bite out of the flesh of others? "Let us lurk privately," you know, kind of cleverly, "for the innocent without cause." In other words, let's try to take from somebody who doesn't really owe us anything, but let's try to take from somebody cleverly, without a righteous cause. You know, we can go into the individual Hebrew words, but we'll move along here. So anyway, it says, "Let us swallow them up alive as the grave, and whole as those that go down into the pit." So he's talking about devouring the innocent, the people are in our midst who don't realize what's going on. "We shall find all precious substance if we do this. We shall fill our houses with spoils." Like the woman who says, "I don't know what criteria they have for providing us with free housing. I haven't got my free house yet. I'm only working part-time as a servant, but I want a free house." And these other people that are working full-time, they can't afford a free house. She doesn't say, "I want them to have a free house first because they work harder than me. They work longer than me. They put more time and energy into becoming something. I think they should get a free house first." No, she wants to know why she doesn't get a free house. You might have to listen to the previous program in order to know what I'm talking about if you just tuned in. But it says in Proverbs, "Cast in thy lot among us." This is what they're tempting you to do. "Let us all have one purse." One purse. We put all our money, all our valuable, all our rights into one purse. And then we as a multitude, a majority, decide who gets what. It says in the Bible, "My son, walk not thou in the ways with them. Refrain thy foot from their path." This one purse. this social compact. For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, and they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privately for their own lives. In other words, you'll be trapped. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. If you covet your neighbor's goods through these systems, it will be your goods that will be taken. Wisdom crieth out without. She uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief places of concourse, in the openings of the gates, in the cities. She uttereth her word, saying, "How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and the fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you, and I will make known my words unto you. Because I have called, and ye refused, I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. But ye have set at naught at all my counsel and would none of my reproof." This is the modern church. They're not doing what Christ said. "I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when you fear, when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me." He's telling you, how many times does God say, "I will not hear them in that day"? Why? Because they've rejected his ways. They've decided to have the one purse way, the exercise authority one over the other way. And Christ said not to go that way. And you can't tell me and expect me to believe that you believe in Christ when you want to go that way, when you are content to force your neighbor to pay for your child's education, health care, welfare, whatever. The church should be your small business administration. The church should be where you go to the free assembly of your congregation if you need a loan to start a business. And you need their wise counsel, not of a multitude, but in a gathering, a free assembly of friends. And you should, education, business, welfare, health, everything. Just the other day, you know, I had gallstones before, and I've had kidney stones a couple of times in my life. And I discovered that if you have a kidney stone, immediately start drinking apple juice, and within hours you have relief, and within a day or so, it's all cleared up. Costs you nothing but apple juice. I like apple juice. You can drink it warm. You can drink it cold. You can drink it with cinnamon. You can do all kinds of things with it. But it gets rid of kidney stones. A guy was telling me that he had a kidney stone. He thought he was dying, and he went to the hospital. Cost him almost $5,000. And basically all they did was give him some pills and tell him to drink lots of water. $5,000. And then he discovered that if you take magnesium, if you have more magnesium in your diet, you won't have kidney stones. Nobody told him that at the hospital. No money in that. You see, in together in congregations, you can discover these things. I'm not saying never go to a hospital. There may be times when you need their expertise. But there's an awful lot of $5,000 bills you probably don't need to pay if you gather together and care about one another's health as much as you care about your own. It says, "Then they shall call upon me, but I will not answer." Why? Because you have not been calling upon one another. You have not been helped. When you gather together in a congregation, you gather together to be of assistance to one another, to help one another. And then God will want to gather with you and help you because you have that character, that Ubuntu, wanting to share. And you have to have it not only with your local congregation, but through a network that reaches from here to Sydney, Australia, and from Sydney, Australia, to Ontario, Canada, from Ontario, Canada, to Cape Town, South Africa. That's what you need. And that's what, if you do not seek, the Lord will not answer you. For that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproofs. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. Remember, they were seeking the blood of their neighbor, and their blood will be what they devour. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from the fear of evil. This is where you need to go. This is where you need to be. This is what you need to seek. And this is what the churches should be providing, and your ministers should be providing for one another. But they are not, but they should be. And we fall into deception. Deception. Caesar was right. Mankind is governed by names and their definitions and their labels. This was the definition of democracy in 1928. Democracy, a government of the masses, authority derived through mass meeting of any form of direct expression, results in mobocracy. Attitude toward the property is communistic. Negating property rights, attitude towards law is that the will of the majority shall regulate whether it is based upon deliberation or governed by passion, prejudice, impulse, without restraint or regard for consequences, result in demagogism, license, agitations, discontent, and anarchy in the sense of chaos. Okay, so what definition was that? Where would you have found that definition? U.S. Army Training Manual of 1928. Amazing. What happens if you were to look in a similar manual in 1952? And I say 28. What does that be? 20 years before? 22 years before? 24 years before? And now you look in, by June of 1952, the following definition was altering the understanding and attitude of the American nation. And it was stating, meaning of democracy, quote, because the United States is a democracy, they start out saying that, the majority of the people decide how our government will be organized and run. And that includes the Army, Navy, and Air Force. The people do this by electing representatives, and these men and women carry out the wishes of the people. That's the Army Field Manual for Soldiers Guide in 1952. That's decidedly different in definition than what we saw in 1928. Decidedly different. It doesn't even refer to America as a republic, but only the United States as a democracy. Changing definition deceives the people. The multitude of those who err is no protection for error. So if we were to look at Benjamin Disraeli, who lived between about 1800 and 1880s, he was a British prime minister. He said, if you establish a democracy, you must in due time reap the fruits of a democracy. With great increase of the public expenditure, you will in due season have wars entered into from passion and not from reason, and you will in due season submit to peace ignominiously sought and ignominiously obtained, which will diminish your authority and perhaps endanger your independence. You will in due season find your property is less valuable and your freedom less complete. This is back in the 1800s. He was telling you this. But how many of you studied this in your public schools? If you were home teaching your children, you could all study this. You know, I recommend as a homeschooling book, The Higher Liberty, because that's what I'm reading out of. These quotes are in the book, The Higher Liberty. It's in the chapter on deception. Ben Franklin advised that a nation of well-informed men who have been taught to know and prize the rights which God has given them cannot be enslaved. But of course, that's not really what you're taught anymore in public schools. You are taught about privilege. You're taught about obedience. You're taught about subjecting yourself to power and authority. And that you're not really even electing representatives anymore. You're told that you're electing lawmakers who will rule over you and decide according to their conscience what is good and what is evil. You no longer have the right to decide that. You have given that power to another. It was not God that gave them that power. It was you that gave them that power, and you gave them that power to obtain benefits at the expense of your neighbor. You have gone so much out of the way and away from the ways of God and the ways of Christ that you don't even know that there is a way back, but there is. And the churches should be preaching it and teaching it, and you should be living it. Benjamin Franklin goes on to say, it is in the region of ignorance that tyranny begins. And ignorance is what you go to school to obtain. Because your view of history has been changed by your school book. We can go through that. We have a whole series that talks about that. And there's volumes, the Reese Commission report in the U.S. Congress. They will show you that people consciously went out of their way to change the way in which Americans viewed history. Because you couldn't control the people. And you needed to control the people if you wanted more and more power. And there are men in this world who want more and more power. In Christianity, we want to empower people more and more on an individual basis so that they become independent souls under God, seeking to do the righteousness of God. And so that's your ministers need to learn how to do that, how to teach the people to be sons of God, children of God. Those rights given to us by God depend upon us valuing our neighbor's rights as much as we value our own. And this is virtue. This is what virtue is. Nothing is beyond reexamination. In a constitutional republic, you might have some safeguards, but Patrick Henry argued against the Constitution of the United States. Because he saw that when evil men take office, the whole gang will be in collusion. They will keep the people in utter ignorance and steal their liberties by ambuscade. Do we understand those flaws? And are we prepared to guard against them? Do we want to understand them? It is not the Constitution that makes this nation great, or has made this nation great, but the noble individuals who rose up every day, worked in the fields and in the factories, cared for their families, and provided for their honest needs within those families and within the communities where they live. James Russell Lowell said, democracy gives every man the right to be his own oppressor. And that's what it does. And we need to repent of that. And until we do, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net. Thank you.